This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Hey everybody, it's Gary Vaynerchuk. Hope everybody's doing super well. I haven't done an interview on the podcast in quite a long time, and I'm extremely excited to be doing so here today. Today we have a gentleman on the show who is a marketer I admire quite a bit from afar, and recently we've gotten to know each other, and the timing was perfect because he's got a new book out. And honestly, I've been talking a lot about entrepreneurship. I've been talking a lot about culture. And I felt like I just really wanted to get into a little bit of depths of marketing on the podcast. And I couldn't think of a better person than Raja and the timing of his incredible new book. So Raja, visually, because I know a lot of people are listening, but people will also watch this. Visually, why don't you hold up your book cover? I've had the feeling of having a book, so I know it's like having a child, so it's fun to show off.
With absolute pleasure. Here is my book, and feel so good about it.
Very good, Raja. Why don't you tell everybody who you are, your name, what you do, and the book you just wrote, and why you wrote the book, and then we'll get into it.
Terrific. So my name is Raja Rajamannar, and I'm the Chief Marketing and Communications Officer for MasterCard. I'm also the president of MasterCard's healthcare business. And I've been in the field of marketing for more than 35 years now, and I have seen a lot of changes over this period of time. And having served both on the business management side, in addition to being on the functional management of marketing, I have been able to get perspectives from different angles. And as I see right now, we are at the verge of an unprecedented level of disruption as far as marketing goes, predominantly led by technologies that are coming at us like a tsunami, new technologies coming at us like a tsunami. The current ways of doing marketing, the current strategies and the current frameworks of marketing will completely collapse immediately. We need to reinvent and rethink marketing. And my whole book called Quantum Marketing exactly does that. It says what these new technologies are, what the new data capabilities are, what the cultural shifts are, and how is it going to impact marketing in ways that were absolutely we could not imagine. And therefore, what the solution should be, how do you look at every aspect of marketing, like whether it is loyalty or advertising or consumer insights, be it whichever part of the ecosystem or the processes of marketing, how do you reinvent it? So I'm challenging a lot of our existing theories and concepts around marketing, and I'm saying they are totally useless at this point in time as we are just entering the fifth paradigm. That's what I call the new phase of marketing where all these disruptions are happening and how marketers can be successful. So this book, Gary, is a little bit like a playbook at a very high level for the marketing folks across all the levels, right from the CMO down to somebody who's just beginning their career in marketing. It's because I simplified it so much and demystified the whole thing that people will really have fun reading it. And it could be inspiring as much as it is daunting.
Raja, on the daunting part, obviously, you know, I'm listening to you and I'm like, ooh, this is good. Because, you know, as you know, I'm a human and a company in the marketing ecosystem that is speaking to, hey, the way we've been doing this is very, very vulnerable. So I'm curious, in detail, what is one of the biggest vulnerabilities? I mean, you know, you just made such an important, powerful statement that hey, the way we've been marketing is about to get massively disrupted. And honestly, I think we probably both agree with this, hence why you probably wrote it down. It's already been disrupted, yet the actions are lagging behind. In your opinion, maybe one or two scenarios where that has happened. Where do you think the conventional marketing industry is bullish on something and you're like, no, my friends, in the framework of quantum, like this is a problem and we need to have this honest discussion.
So, Gary, in fact, you're absolutely right that already the disruptions have happened. But my assertion is that the disruption we have seen is nothing. If you look at any shift in the past, it was predominantly a couple of technologies. Like when we moved from paradigm one to paradigm two, it was just radio and television in a big way. Two to three was data analytics and internet. Three to four is social media and mobile devices. Now, two technologies in each stage, but now we're getting more than 24 technologies which are coming at us, like artificial intelligence, augmented reality, virtual reality, wearables, smart speakers, Internet of Things, autonomous cars. You know, it's like a breathless number of technologies which are coming our way. And we are totally unprepared as a marketing community and as companies as to how we are going to navigate that brave new future. So this is number one. Number two, when you look at some of the areas, like, you know, if you look at loyalty as an example, we spend hundreds of billions with a B, hundreds of billions of dollars every year on loyalty programs. Now, if I look at some interesting parallels in people's real lives, a BBC survey, which I came across, had said that it was actually, the survey was not done by BBC, but it was on BBC.com. They said that more than 70% of the people in a relationship, either marriage or living relationship, have admitted to have cheated on their partners. This is in spite of the fact that there is an explicit or an implicit commitment with a, either a marriage contract or a legal contract or a religious mantras, whatever it is. And they have consequences if they are found straying. The consequences could be financial damage, reputational damage, emotional hurt for the people they care about, and so on. In spite of the commitment and the consequences, people anyway stray. They're not loyal. Now I'm saying, as marketers, are we stupid in assuming that people will be loyal to our brands when they're not loyal in their own personal lives?
I love that.
Right? And look at the second aspect of it, which is...
And I mean, real quick, I'm sorry to interrupt you. The sheer delta in one's appreciation to their spouse or partner versus to a coffee or a credit card or a sneaker is laughable.
Exactly. You said it, right? In fact, I just tried to put a hierarchy for people in terms of what is important in people's lives. Oh. What is their level of loyalty or absence of it? And commercial transactions are way, way below. There is no concept of loyalty there. So how do you really think about it? So this is one part of it. Look at the other way around. When I grew up in India, like in most of the British Commonwealth countries, there are, you know, those posters which used to be kept behind the cashier in a shop. It says the customer is our king or queen.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, if customer is truly the king or queen, is the king loyal to his or her subjects, or the subjects should be loyal to the king or the queen? So which means, are brands going to be loyal or should be loyal to their clients or customers, or are customers expected to be loyal? So we got the equation wrong, because as brands, while we say that customer, we are in the service of the customer, we expect customers to be loyal to us. That's a complete, we got it wrong in terms of the entire perspective.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt. The shock, that would be the word I would use, the shock that I was met with in my own body 13 years ago, 12 years ago, when I entered the major industry field, Fortune 5000 land, with my company VaynerMedia, was on a good day, companies considered the customer. On a normal day, they spent 100% of their energy on their P&L, and the CFO actually ran the company. I've never seen anything like it. I come from CEO land, and I am probably more chief heart officer, call it HR, customer service rep. I literally have lived my whole life customer. The way I built both my companies, my family's and mine, was employee, customer, me. My dad, immigrant businesses, you know, the business is the third child, so you feed it, and not, you don't take money out of it and buy a boat, you know. And so the least consumer centric thing I've ever seen in my life is Fortune 500 companies, period.
See, and the irony, Gary, is you call it customer service, which means you're in the service of the customer. So who should be loyal to whom? Think about that same
100%. I laugh when people are like, our customers are not brand loyal to us. I'm like, they're not your customers. See, this is an interesting point, Raja, right?
You're so right.
Right? The audacity, what is this, slavery? The audacity that because they've tried your service or have used it for 4 years or buy your product, you know, it's just audacity. And the for granted that people take, you know, listen, coming from your industry, when you have let's talk, or we could talk colas, because I'll use cola, even though I think your industry and credit card had a similar dynamic because you have two or three or four leaders, but let's use cola. But the reason I like the credit card industry is in the face of cryptocurrency, in the face of new dynamics, things change and people lose because they take it for granted. And when they're taking it for granted, inevitably there's underlining resentment, unconscious resentment at the scale, at the consumer, and they are prepared to act on it when given the alternative.
So totally right. So totally right. In fact, you know, that's the whole thing. The mindset with which we have to approach has dramatically changed, right? Now, loyalty is, for example, I'm saying we have to reinvent loyalty. We should actually talk about preference management, right? And preference management at every stage or every time the consumer has to make a decision, how does the brand show up and influence the choice in favor of itself? That's what the whole mandate would be going forward, as opposed to saying, I win the consumer is loyal to me, etc. So that has to evolve. Likewise, I'm saying advertising, right? Now, as a consumer, as an ordinary human being, do I like advertisements? Maybe for a short time during Super Bowl, just to see what's out there, because that's a cultural moment. But otherwise, advertisements are an absolute nuisance. They're an interruption to my experience. Now, we talk of consumer experience design, seamlessness, frictionlessness. And here we are, when I'm watching a YouTube video, for example, on some animals or whatever it could be, every 3 minutes, annoyingly, there is an interruption. Now, I'm reacting as a consumer, as a normal human being. I hate them. At that time, I'm just waiting. When will that skip button will come up so I can click on it? I'm not engaged with that ad. And to make my life more difficult, they want me to now suffer through two advertisements, not one. They say 1x2 and 2x2. Like, you know, this is total consumer.
I mean, it's by the way, I love this. This is exciting me to no end. They literally, when they went to digital, they literally made the little X on the phone for you to click out so small. Yes. That you would by accident hit the, how do people not understand back home, Raja, at the math labs and the media companies and the analytics teams, everyone's high-fiving. Look at the click-through rate. In real life, when I miss it and I can't click it, I literally look and I'm like, I will never buy a Toyota in my life. I will never, like, I get mad.
There you go, exactly. You have,
like, intent matters. And it is very clear when we create that level of friction for the consumer to trick them into, it's like kidnapping my attention.
Exactly, without your permission or without you feeling good about it, right?
Correct.
Look at this way, Gary. On the one hand, we are interrupting them so badly. Consumers are therefore reacting, right? There are estimates anywhere between 600 million and 2.2 billion people have installed ad blockers. Mm. Predominantly in Asia, it's growing like there is no tomorrow. 600 million, it's at scale. You're talking about 10% plus of your population in the world, or almost 10%, one. Number two, they are going to ad-free environment and paying money. For example, YouTube itself gives you an option to have ad-free by paying $12 or $13 every month.
Correct.
So people are running.
Look what's happening. Look what's happening with the biggest medium in modern history around advertising, the television. The television commercial, as you and I sit and have this discussion right now, is fundamentally over. And what I mean by that, the growth of OTT in the last 5 years is staggering. Netflix is the dominant player, zero commercials. To your point, something that people did not think was gonna happen, the premium version of the ad-supported companies, the Hulus of the world, growing, because people value time and they say to themselves, wait a minute, let me get this right. Even at income levels that may not seem obvious, let me get this right. I can pay $20 a month and not lose these 2 minutes every time I watch something, or I can, and they are choosing, even with restrictive average incomes that you would, similar to Uber. I passed on Uber famously to my community twice in the angel round. But I invested in it a little bit later because I couldn't believe who was using an Uber. I was like, these people can't afford this. Wait a minute. Convenience is always going to be king.
Yes.
And in New York, waiting for a yellow cab for 2 minutes is still worse than still being in the coffee shop, hitting the Uber, and even though I'm paying $21 and I can't afford it, I'm choosing convenience and lack of friction and time so I can afford it actually. And that's what we're gonna see in advertising. People are gonna pay for the premium stuff and ads are gonna go slowly but surely into a place where they're gonna struggle to be consumed. And then what you see in Super Bowl, where they're very expensive, is it's a hobby to watch it. The companies step up their game from an entertainment level, hence the celebrities and the creativity. And I think that Super Bowl-like DNA is gonna trickle into every single piece of content they put out in the world, not at the same expense, but the effort and the lack of audacity and the effort to try to bring value.
Absolutely. And in fact, that's exactly what I say in my book, which is advertising as we know is dead. We have to completely reframe, rethink advertising. And how do we go about it, right? And so each one of these kind of areas I'm asking in a very provocative way. And I'm not just stopping at asking, but I'm also trying to give some suggested solutions or approaches, which are obviously not comprehensive. People have to keep thinking about different ways of solving the issue and accomplishing their objectives. But this is what broadly I'm approaching as far as the book is concerned. I feel so excited that finally it has been printed and it's out in the market on the 9th of February.
I love it. What? Let's bounce around here a little bit more about you. How somebody who's listening, how did your career in marketing start? You know, what kind of kid were you? Were you more art? Were you more math? Little inspiration and maybe pattern recognition or blueprint for some of the audience. How did you get to this point in your career? Or to even bring more value, you know, what are the common themes that you've seen from others and your contemporaries that have gotten them to the place of CMO-ship, which I think a lot of people who are listening right now actually inspire to me?
So I would say in my own case, Gary, I started studying chemical engineering. And so I'm a data and a quantitative guy to start with at the core. That's been my training. When I went to MBA, I wanted to specialize in environmental management about, you know, pollution control and how to keep the world green and so on. So I had that sense of purpose and therefore I was pursuing in that direction. But something happened during the internship. When I was doing my summer internship, I overheard a conversation in the company I was working about some advertisement they were creating to make cosmetics, color cosmetics, more acceptable to people, particularly from the conservative backgrounds in South India. So I said, why are these guys missing the point? It should be so simple. And I just created an ad in 5 minutes. And I said, is it bad to look good, was the headline. And I just put the sketch and I said, hey, what do you guys think about it? And they were zapped. They said, well, this is absolutely awesome. And they said, this is brilliant. And actually they created the campaign off that.
No.
And it went on to become a hit. So suddenly when you get that kind of an early success.
Yeah, when you get that affirmation.
This is where my
affirmation.
Skill is. So I quickly started taking marketing classes in the second year in specialization and I started thoroughly enjoying it. So since then, I have
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I want everybody to hear this because I'm always thinking about the audience. Back to the whole point of this conversation. Putting yourself in positions for serendipity is an incredibly underestimated aspect of life. And when I hear that story, I think about the other places that he applied, that Raja applied for internships. I think about why he even got that internship. You know, I think about all why he was even in that hall, but being aware, this is where I'm going a little bit different to make it really important. Being open to opportunity at all times is an incredible skill set and something I believe in. Raja?
Absolutely. And I couldn't have articulated it any better at all. It's so true. And because, you know, all along for 7 years, I was pursuing the direction of environmental management. And I just flexed into this, pivoted to marketing. Also, interestingly, what I did was I changed quite a few companies. You know, at least going by the standards in my day, I worked at a company where I started a marketing department. And learned the hard way. I was the junior flunky in a 3-people marketing department. Again, we produced award-winning ads and logistic solutions, new kind of pricing models, new kind of packaging. I had real fun. And when I was awarded at that time the marketer of the year, Unilever picked me up and I moved to Unilever, where I had to unlearn some of the things that I have wrongly assumed and learn things in a more classical, grounded kind of a fashion and understand structured processes without losing the entrepreneurial spirit of my previous company.
Well, let's go to this because I know a lot of marketers are going to be listening. Do you feel like a lot of marketers need to now unlearn the things that the Unilevers and Proctors and others had taught?
I think so.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I do too.
Okay. Because of the frameworks.
Yeah, go ahead.
When the frameworks you have been taught or you have learned on themselves are collapsing, then you have to absolutely relearn and you have to unlearn some of the stuff that you have actually picked up along the way. So that's one thing. The other thing I would say is I have always been very open to a move. So in fact, one of my biggest shocks, and this is a big lesson for me in my life, is when I joined Unilever, at that time, the head of marketing said that you have to start your career in sales, not in marketing. I said, why should I be in sales? Because I thought sales was for the less intelligent, less creative people, only gifted with the gift of gab. So he said, no, you need to understand what it means to sell. Believe me, I hated the first few weeks of doing sales, but then slowly I started appreciating it. And over a period of time, I realized marketing in isolation is fluffy.
Correct.
You need to be able to connect the dots to either sales or to the business outcomes.
Correct.
Otherwise, what's the purpose of marketing?
I'll be honest with you. This is my biggest problem in this ecosystem. I'm a marketer and a brand man. But the sheer lack of connection to reality in the creative marketing industry is ludicrous and tone deaf and actually grossly negligent by most brand people and creative agencies, period.
Without a doubt. I totally agree. And I think that's one of the reasons why I keep saying that marketing is in an existential crisis precisely for that reason. Because we have, as marketers, isolated ourselves in these bubbles, doing marketing for marketing's sake, and then are not really mainstreaming ourselves in companies. So much so that there are studies now which are showing that a bulk of CEOs don't have faith and trust in their marketing departments as business drivers. They're eliminating the roles of CMOs, they're fragmenting marketing, distributing marketing, responsibilities outside of marketing, and so on.
It's Raja, are you anticipating discomfort from your peers when they read this? Because it sounds like you're gonna be poking at the golden goose, the establishment of that. Have you given it to some friends in the industry? I mean, this sounds, listen, I'm getting excited by the second. I wasn't, I go in pretty improv, so I didn't have a full sense of, I had a good sense of you and you were thoughtful. So I said yes to do the podcast. I don't think I really understood it sounds like a different angle and clearly a very different demeanor and tone and energy, but it seems like you're gonna be poking at something that has caused a lot of people to be anxious about my communication, not style, of what I actually say. Are you anticipating that? And have you had people read it yet or to look at it?
In fact, I realized I was going to poke the bear in a big way, right? And I wanted to make sure, firstly, because I'm doing it, I had to cover all my, logic, my data support and my examples and everything had to be perfectly prepared on the
correct, website, correct.
Which I spent some time to really do that well. Second, I ran this manuscript past some of my peers, the CMO of Unilever,
smart.
CMO of Microsoft, smart. Of IBM, yes. Of General Mills, and et cetera. And I was so delighted, whether it is a classical company of those sorts, which I just listed out, or the contemporary ones like the Facebook and Twitter, their CMOs, et cetera, I have gone through that. I went to professors at Harvard and Yale, asked them to review. And I went to subject matter experts in company for areas like blockchains and AI and so on. And finally, I went to a few CEOs, including MasterCard's own CEO. I feel very grateful that they were absolutely applauding the content. And then they said, Raja, I think somebody had to call it and you are doing it. And so I said, will you be able to endorse the book then? Because one is, we can have a secret private conversation where you pat me on the back and say, Raja, here's great stuff.
Yes.
So they agreed and they have actually given their endorsements.
That's
and
great.
This is the who is who of the marketing community from a practitioner's point of view, and also from CEOs, where they are actually leveraging marketing in their companies, and all kinds of companies. I feel extremely grateful for the response I got. And if I can say just one quote which stood out for me more than anyone else, this is from the CMO of General Mills, Ivan Pollard. His quote goes something like this. He says, "This book will do to our view of marketing what Copernicus's book did to our view of the world. It'll change it forever." Now, I felt the probably the highest compliment that I could aspire for from a peer of mine. And I felt incredibly grateful. And so far, the response has been very good. A lot of people are uncomfortable saying that, wow, you know, do I want to let my CEO to see this? How do I act? So there is obviously tension, but I think it is necessary and it's a healthy tension as best as I see it.
I couldn't agree more. Like everybody, I'm sure you can pick this up on Amazon and Barnes & Nobles and all the other things. Raja, one more time, the name of the book, because I encourage everybody. Look, everybody who listens to this knows I don't learn from reading, so I don't tend to read, but the people that I allow on this podcast to talk about books are people I have a read on them, which makes me uncomfortably comfortable to give them this platform. I'd love everybody in the Vayner Nation to pick up this book if it's hit a chord, or maybe in a lot of ways creates an intellect or a black and white or a mathematical or a different angle to a lot of the things I believe in. So Raja, as I leave now, please tell them the name of the book and thank you for being on the show.
Thank you very much. The name of the book again is Quantum Marketing. Please do pick it up. And again, I would love to engage with any one of you if you have ideas that challenge what I'm saying. I would love to have these conversations. I'm on Twitter or on LinkedIn, Raja Rajamannar, and love to do that. And Gary, thank you so much. And I look up to you as one of those mavericks and absolutely brilliant folks who disrupted the industry in a way that nobody could have anticipated. And I think the first time that we met, I mentioned this to you saying that, wow, you know, I continue that feeling, and I'm delighted for your support and look forward to having more conversations in future.
Cheers, my friend.
Thank you so very much. Much appreciated. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye, Raj. I got to run. Talk to you soon.
Thank Justin, you, Gary. Really, seriously appreciate it.
Of course.
So great, you guys. It was awesome.
Thank you,
guys.
All right. Episode's over. Please leave a review and subscribe up on Apple. It would mean a lot to me. Thank you very much.
Hey, podcast. Joe from Team Gary here. Today's highlighted review is Love the Content by Lex. Team Gary V, I love the content of this podcast. There are so many informative guests and new opportunities for me to learn. Thanks, Gary, for everything you do. Thanks to Lex. Keep those reviews coming. We could highlight yours next.